This is our number
10. It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Dissonant. Disconcerting. Just some of the feedback I'm hearing about today's hour number 2 echo. We'll come to you from Picard Subaru Studio. Welcome. It's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. Hey, in case you missed it, I wanted to update you on a little exclusive bit of information that we got right at the end of Friday's show. You know, we broke on our show a couple of months ago the story of the restaurateur down in Chehalis, Rod Samuelson, the 81-year-old owner of Spiffy's restaurant. January 1st was their 50th anniversary in business. And Rod came on the show last week and said he went before a judge because the state of Washington was fining Rod $400,000 for being open in December. And the reason he was open was because his employees, some of whom had been with him for 30 years, 25 years, they were family. They are family. Not by blood, but by just the length that they've been together. And they weren't able to get through to state unemployment with that crackerjack Susie Levine, who's moving up to the Biden administration in charge. And they didn't know how they were going to pay their mortgage. They didn't know how they were going to feed their family. And Rod said, I'm going to open the restaurant back up. The state of Washington imposed fines totaling more than $400,000 on Rod. But he came on my show last week and said he went before a judge and the fines will be forgiven as long as he closes the doors once again and obeys the governor's edict. Well, his employees have gotten unemployment, and he said they're just in a better place now. And so he did. He complied. And he was under the impression when he came on my show that the $400,000 in fines were to be forgiven. Well, I got information. This came right at the end of Friday's show, and then I'll give you a little update. But Tim at the State Department of Illinois wrote to me and said, no, what Rod said is not true. They said that he had 15 days to respond to each fine, and there's no appeal after 15 days. And he said that on December 7th, Illinois fined Rod and Spiffy $67,000. On December 16th, they fined Rod and Spiffy's $77,000. And the spokesman for L&I tells me that those fines totaling $145,000 will not be forgiven, that they didn't appeal them in time. The 15-day period is over for both. And they tell me that the state of Washington is going to continue to go after this 81-year-old restaurateur, good man in his community, been creating jobs and paying taxes for 50 years. So I talked to Rod this morning, and I asked him to come on the show. Nicole and I had been in touch with him. I had a long talk with Rod after I got off the air on Friday about this, and he didn't even know that the state was coming after him for $145,000 still. So I talked to Rod this morning, asked him to come on with you and me this afternoon, and he said he was really sorry, but his lawyer just told him, don't talk until the lawyer can figure out the next step. And I, of course, respect that and told him no problem. But he told me to tell you he's not losing any sleep. Can you believe it? Not one case of COVID has been attached to his restaurant. He opened because his employees couldn't get through to the Washington State Unemployment Office because it was such a disaster. And he wanted his employees to be able to pay their bills. And for that, the state of Washington says now that they are still going to try to crush this man. $145,000. Now, what I did not ask Rod is, I wanted to ask him. Maybe I'll ask him next time I get him on the show. I don't know if he has $145,000 laying around to give to the state of Washington. But just the thuggery of this, of the state saying, we want to destroy you because you took care of employees who have worked for you for 25, 30 years. It's really distressing that this is what's happening here in Washington State. All right, with that as mere prelude, let's get to the fastest 15 here. And we're seeing jobs being destroyed across the nation swiftly under the new Biden administration. Joe Biden, with an executive order last week, he said that they are stopping the Keystone Pipeline. And with that, with the swipe of a pen, 10,000 jobs came to an end. 10,000 jobs. Neil Crabtree, he's a welder foreman on the Keystone Pipeline. And he said, man, people in this country, working class people, you know, good paying blue collar jobs. If you're a union welder, you're making good dough. And in exchange, you put in a good hard day's work. That's the way it's supposed to be in America. Neil Crabtree told Fox News that people in this country were already really hurting just with the economy the way it is.
Industries just like the rest of the country. You know, COVID hurt us bad last year. We had a lot of projects canceled. So we've got guys that haven't worked in months and in some cases years. And to have a project of this magnitude canceled, it's going to hurt a lot of people, a lot of families, a lot of communities. The Keystone is something that's we've been trying to build for a decade now. And it's been a really hot political fight, but we finally got started on it this year. I was working in Nebraska building a pump station, but as soon as the new administration came in on day one, they decided they want to put 11,000 people out of work.
Yeah, 11,000 jobs on the Keystone Pipeline. In total, Joe Biden wiped out 100,000 jobs in America in his first week.
Basically, it was the moment that he signed the executive order. You know, it was about 2 o'clock Thursday when we were told that we're not going to progress any further, but we took a couple of days packing our stuff up, and we actually got laid off Friday, and I'll be taking my unemployed self back to Arkansas in the morning.
And Neil said that it's just all about politics.
Because of the situation the country's in right now, this is not a time to be making political statements. We need to be finding ways to put more Americans back to work, not the other way around. So I was very surprised.
And this is where, you know, whether it's Rod, it's Spiffy's and the state of Washington trying to crush him, or the new Biden administration crushing 100,000 jobs in America. How are we doing this to the people that we should be holding up and thanking who create jobs and pay taxes?
It's not that easy, you know what I mean? And I don't consider this a job. I consider it a career, and you spend a lifetime, you know, fine-tuning your skills and advancing yourself. And you go start another job, you're starting at the bottom and trying to work your way up. And we're not talking about men and women that are just out of high school, just starting out in life. We're talking about people that have mortgage payments. They got kids to feed, insurance to provide. When you start over in life, it doesn't work that way. I doubt that these politicians would like it if someone told them to go start over and find a different job.
Ooh, I would love to tell a bunch of them to start over and find different jobs. But it's because, oil and gas are evil. It's, you know, been the economic engine of our country for 100 years, but it's evil now.
I can't understand how the pipeline industry has become the villains, you know, because the American public, they don't understand. But by not building this pipeline, it's not going to keep the oil from getting to the market. It's already coming. It's coming by rail car. It's coming by trucks. Just always believe that a pipeline is a lot safer. And we know as well, too, that the country is moving, you know, to cleaner energy in a greener direction. But it's not something that's going to happen overnight. You can't just flip a switch and go from fossil fuels to renewable energy. You know, I think the government's going about it the wrong way. If they want to start developing that infrastructure, they can, but you can't get rid of us at the same time. It bothers me when, you know, they're overseas setting up family members to profit off of the same thing they want to stop here in America. It's definitely aggravating.
Well, yeah, and it is. It's all for show. As he said, there are rail cars and trucks that are going to move the gas and the oil, and that's more dangerous. It's more expensive. Consumers are going to have to pay more. But it comes back down to these people, this working class, that whether it's the state of Washington or the national government, the new administration, they're just wiping people out.
I'm not exaggerating when I say I'm nervous. Sometimes I don't sleep well. And I'm in the process of trying to live the American dream right now. I'm building a house, and the bank may own it before I ever get a chance to live in it. So I'm definitely worried.
It is heartbreaking to watch what's happening to these good working class, good paying, blue collar jobs. Next up in the Fastest 15, I cannot let the show and the day go by without a mention of the passing of Larry King. Larry King is the reason, a significant reason, why I do this for a living. And I know I've often told the story about when I was 17 years old, I was a busboy at the World Trade Center down on the Seattle waterfront. Is that still? I always wonder. I got to look it up. Is that still there? Is it still called the World Trade Center? I don't even know. But we had a big banquet room, and we would do high school reunions and wedding receptions and bar mitzvahs. And so I'd work until the wee hours, and then I'd usually get off about 2 a.m. You know, we'd tear down, we'd roll up all the tables and stack all the chairs. And I'd drive home, and Larry King was on all night back then on King 1090 Radio, where I would eventually work a few years later. And I listened to him tell stories. I listened to him interview politicians. And that was the first time something sparked in me that said, man, talk radio might be a really cool way to make a living. I didn't realize I'd have to fight impossible odds to make a career in the biz. But I listened to him every single night, and then I'd fall asleep listening to him, and whatever he was talking about would permeate my dreams because I would have the radio on all night. And 17 years old, I was coming up. My 18th birthday was going to be right before Election Day, 1980. And he would have all the presidential candidates on that summer. And I was filled with the power of, I'm going to get to vote in America. And so Larry King, incredible career, passed away this weekend. He was in the hospital a couple weeks ago with COVID, but he had been moved out of the ICU. But he'd had several heart attacks. But it was stories that he would tell that I really enjoyed. And I went on YouTube after I heard of his passing, and I found one of the stories that he often told. He would repeat his stories every few months, you know, like Nicole accuses me of doing. And I found one of his stories about when he was a young broadcaster in radio. By the way, the sort of thing never happened to me.
I've been in radio 2 weeks. I was 23 years old. And I did everything, because I did sports, I did news, I did disc jockey, everything. And one day they knew I was a glutton, you know, because Larry will do it. So the station manager calls me and says, the all-night guy is sick. Would you like to fill in tonight? Sure, no problem.
By the way, we did not add the annoying audio that was in as a part of this video.
Station all alone was a small station. I'll never forget this. I'm playing these records, and the phone rings. I pick it up, say, WHR. And this lady's voice, and I could still hear her voice. She goes, I want you. What'd you say? I said, I want you. And I said to myself, there's a couple of extra pluses to being in this band. So I said the immediate thing, I swear to God, I get off at 6. And she says, that I won't do. I got to go to work. You got to come now. I said, but I'm on the air. She says, I'm only 12 blocks from the station. Here's my address. If you can make it, please, I really want you. Hangs up. I got her address. I'm the only one in the station. So here's what the audience heard. Folks, I'm only sitting in tonight. So I got a real treat for you. You're going to hear the entire Harry Belafonte at Carnegie Hall album uninterrupted. At 33 minutes. Which is all the time I needed. To this day, that's still true.
Down the way where the nights are gay and the sun shines.
I put the record on. I get the car. I swear to God. I rush to her house. 11 blocks away. I pull into the house. The light is on. The Volkswagen was in the driveway. She said the door would be open. The door was open. She's sitting there. She wore a white negligee. I never saw her face clear. A little lamp was on.
My way. Won't be back.
The radio's on, Belafonte's singing. She opens up her arms, I run into her arms, I put my arms, my cheek goes against her cheek, and on the radio, Belafonte singing Jamaica Farewell.
Down the way where the nights, where the nights, where the nights,
where the nights, where the nights, where the nights, I push her back, I jump in the car, I drive to the station, and this is Jewish masochism. I keep the radio on.
Where the nights,
and I was petrified. You know, I come back, all the phones are ringing. I'm apologizing to people. And the last call, I never forgot it. Old Jewish guy. You know. WHR, and I hear this guy go, Where the nights. I'm going crazy. I said, sir, I apologize. Why didn't you change the station? He says, I'm an invalid. And they stepped the station for me on top of the bureau. I can't reach.
Oh, one of the many stories from Larry King that just enchanted me about the fun that this genre and this medium could be. So Larry King passed away this weekend. I'll tell you the story another time when I snuck into his studio at Crystal City when I was 19 years old. But that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Okay, coming up next, another casualty of all the crime in this region. Seattle businesses, many of them no longer can get theft insurance. And if more insurance companies do this, it will destroy businesses throughout the city and eventually the region. I'm going to talk to a business owner about his plight next on the Dory Monson Show. Well, you may remember this guy, Matt Humphrey. He owns some barbershops in the area called Steel Barber. And we talked to him a couple of months ago when some brazen thieves used a slingshot to break his front door glass, came in, stole a bunch of stuff. And it's just another story that amidst the pandemic, amidst all of the economic turmoil, that we have rampant crime, and our Seattle City Council has made things much, much worse as they want to eliminate misdemeanor crimes in the city. But Matt sent us a message over the weekend about how they're now adding insult to injury. And Matthew Humphrey from Steel Barber joins us once again here on the Dory Monson Show. Matt, good to talk to you again.
Good morning. You too, Dory. I appreciate being on.
Although, I'm sorry, it's always under challenging circumstances. So tell me and my listeners what the insult that has been added to injury is.
Yeah, you know, it's a big one. It's our insurance company for our business insurance canceled our theft policy because of the recent claim from the break-in we had in October. And, you know, it's it adds insult to the injury because it costs quite a bit more to have that theft insurance in the first place. And the unfortunate and frightening thing is my agent told me that literally hundreds of other businesses in the area are losing their theft insurance policies as well because of the current climate of lack of enforcement for these crimes. And so now as I search for more insurance, it's going to cost us quite a bit more if we can even get it. That's the fear, is it's like earthquake insurance. I'm trying to find theft insurance now for Seattle.
Well, and this is a very important message to get out there because, well, members of the council like Lisa Herbold and others have said that they want to eliminate misdemeanor crimes. They want to not prosecute misdemeanor crimes in Seattle. And if that's the case, Seattle will become, and we're already pretty close to it, but we will become the crime capital of the country. I heard one police analyst say that there's nothing like that anywhere in the world where they legalize crimes against, you know, break-ins of homes and businesses like it's happened to you. And yes, insurance companies, of course, are going to not insure homes or businesses in Seattle if our radical council gets its way.
And the timing just couldn't be worse, Dory. I mean, we're still hanging on with 25% capacity limitations. You know, our county and King County hasn't opened up again, and we're just sitting here, you know, suffering already. So to have this happen is just another blow, and it's not a political issue. It's a moral issue. I mean, to have crime available without consequence, it literally is creating a mini crime spree. Several of my business friends were broken into and some of my neighbors in one night on December 19th here in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And it's the same type of crime, the same slingshot bandits, as they call them, out there. And, you know, unfortunately, my detective's like, yeah, there's nothing they can really do. And it's disheartening, and it seems fundamentally wrong. And I hope, you know, the city of Seattle and our residents will stand up for the little guy, because, you know, we're a small business. We're trying our best to even survive. And I think at the end of the day, when you look at not even being able to protect your business now, it's not a victimless crime. I keep throwing that out there every time I can. This is, yeah.
I mean, how many employees do you have between the three shops?
So 35.
Okay. So, I mean, we're talking about an awful lot of jobs on the line. And this is, you know, I talked about this right after the first of the year. I took a couple of weeks off at the end of 2020, Matthew, and I spent a lot of time thinking about my radio show. And one of the things that I am reinvigorated about is standing up for the working class, whether it's the, you know, the massive tax hikes that are coming on all families, or the insane criminal justice policies that are threatening to wipe out just, you know, good middle class, working class jobs like your business and you provide. And I get very frustrated because I just don't see much effort among our politicians to have any concern about the middle class. They pay it lip service, but everything they do is designed to wipe you guys out. And we need to fight this. We need to stand up against this.
Yeah, I agree. There's the challenge really right now that I face every day is, how do I keep the doors open under limited capacity? And how do I go up against this kind of crime? I'm going to now try to find private security to help cover my three locations. And that's going to cost me more at a time when I can't afford more. And what I'm watching happen in our city, in our state, is a lack of support for businesses of my size. There are no city grants for businesses of my size. We're kind of at the mercy of the federal government and their programs, which are, you know, a lifeline if they can get here fast enough. But in the meantime, you know, anything that we can do to make it on our own, I don't want your listeners to think for a second that we're victims here. It's like Free Solo, that documentary. We're going handhold to handhold. Sure. And not looking down for fear of death. We're just really, you know, doing everything we can to do our part. and in fact, hiring people. I mean, I'm actually just hired 3 new people because, you know, the challenge is there's business out there to do, but we can't do it if we're susceptible to just ongoing rampant crime. There's got to be a change. Yeah. And in the sense, the urgency is high. Like, you have to sound the alarm right now. Like, me losing theft insurance is not of negligence on my part. It's an unfortunate reality in Seattle. I got broken into in 2017, and I didn't have theft insurance, and I had to make a small claim. So that was the excuse that they're using, is you had 2 claims in 3 years. Well, yeah. Doing business in Seattle shouldn't be such a gigantic risk that a small business can't afford it. And, you know,
I love your free solo comparison, but it makes me sick that the city in which I was born and grew up has become El Capitan for somebody to do a business in. It's just it's this insurmountable foe, it seems. Well, okay, so right now you're going forward without theft coverage. So, I mean, just one more bad break-in just finish you off?
Well, I sure hope not, Dory. I'm looking hard with my broker to try to find an alternative carrier and redo all my insurance, and the cost is just going to go up significantly. So, you know, again, I go back to, I'm going to do my part, and I'm going to implore all my, you know, civic leaders here to do their part to help us stop this now. I mean, it's not just me. It's, you know, I've got restaurants all around me. I've got other small businesses and large businesses that continue to suffer from the same thing. So I don't want to be driven out of this city that I'm so invested in and love. Yep, you know, I've got kids in school.
Yeah, all right. So I actually thought about you, I think it was Saturday morning, Matt. I was looking in the mirror, and I noticed my hair was really long. And I remembered last time I talked to you, you told me that whatever your nice haircut, $70, $80 hair, you told me it would change my life. And I was thinking, well, I better grow it out really long before I ever try one of those. So you might be seeing me one of these days.
Well, please let me know when you come. We'd love to take care of you. Thanks, Dory, for getting some exposure on this challenge.
Yeah, you bet. Okay, Matt Humphrey, he operates Steel Barbershops, 3 outlets around the area here. And this is what happens when we have politicians who encourage this much crime. We are going to see some economic devastation. And first the pandemic and then this. All right, love to hear your thoughts. You can text me, 98973. Lots more to come here on the Dory Monson Show. The Dory Monson Show rolls on. Well, you probably heard late last week, Chuck Schumer had what is so far, we're only 25 days into 2021, but he had the soundbite of the year so far. He was talking about the Senate and going into the impeachment trial of Donald Trump, and Chuck Schumer said this.
But you make no mistake. There will be a trial, and when that trial ends, senators will have to decide if they believe Donald John Trump incited the insurrection against the United States.
That's so good. So this weekend, I'm getting caught up in all the network Sunday news shows. I don't know why. They're so useless. But I thought, well, maybe they'll have some fun with it. No, ABC on This Week with George Stephanopoulos, they just edited it up clean for Chuck.
46th president confronts multiple crises as the Senate prepares to try a former president for the first time.
Senators will have to decide if they believe Donald John Trump incited the insurrection.
The insurrection? That's boring. Why would you edit out the best part of the soundbite, for crying out loud? Then also, from over the weekend, I thought this was very interesting. During the campaign trail, Joe Biden kept saying, by the way, I have a very interesting update on who the teachers union has hired I'll give that to you in the big lead at 2. But because the teachers don't want to go back to work unless they get moved up the vaccination chain and all of that. But I'll get back to that. But during the campaign, Joe Biden, he repeatedly said that if he was president, he had a plan to get America back on track with the coronavirus. Now, it's a very different story. Now, Joe Biden says this about COVID-19.
If we fail to act, there will be a wave of evictions and foreclosures in the coming months as this pandemic rages on, because there's nothing we can do to change the trajectory of the pandemic in the next several months.
There's nothing we can do to change the direction of the pandemic. On the campaign trail, Joe Biden specifically said, I have a plan. And now that he's elected president, he's saying, no, there's nothing we can do. Right, but your whole campaign was what a dismal failure your predecessor was at handling all of this. But now that he's elected, has the news called him out on that? CNN, by the way, they have removed the COVID death ticker that had been a sidebar graphic for months and months and months. They just put it back up. I just turned it back on. Oh, yeah. 1,200 deaths today. Wow, CNN took it down for a few days, but after withering and reasonable criticism, they just put the COVID death ticker back up. Wow, glad I turned it on right as I was saying that. It had been gone late last week and all weekend. Okay, big lead at 2 is coming up next.